You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 76, Fun is Back at Nintendo. Today on the podcast, Michael brought his shiny new Nintendo Switch, and we had some time to play a few of the games, check out the hardware before the podcast started recording, and of course, we spent this episode talking about the fit and finish of the product, whether or not it meets the expectations of the public and our own personal expectations. And we talked about technological convergence at a larger scale in the gaming industry and whether or not we're moving to a future where there is no delineation between the home and mobile. Of course, we have that a bit now with smartphones, but smartphones aren't really purpose-built to do one thing and one thing well, which is to play games like handheld consoles are. And the Nintendo Switch does that exceedingly well. So stick around for the conversation, even if you're not a gamer. I personally found the chat about technological convergence intriguing. But if that doesn't sound appealing, well, there's not much I can do about that. Go ahead and skip this one. And now the show. When everything is broken. You know, it's weird because it feels like yesterday we were talking about the Switch announcement, which was, I think, now back in November when we first started talking about it, right? Yep. And I remember telling you, man, it feels like it's a year away. I know March isn't that far away, but it just felt so far away. And it was such a tease seeing the video of how that whole thing worked. And it's March 3rd today, and I'm looking at Michael, and he's got a Nintendo Switch in his hand.
Yep.
And before we started recording this podcast, we actually took it apart, played with it a bit, looked at the controllers. It is everything that I wanted in a modern Nintendo product. It looks as good as it did in the commercial. It works as well as it does in the commercial, which seems like a rarity these days.
Yeah. No? I mean, it,
to deliver on something that's promised, you know, commercials, there's so many ways you can cheat how a product looks and works, but this is what you see in the ad is what you get. And we managed to play a couple of the 1-2 Switch games that really showcase the wireless controllers, the gyroscopes that are built into it, and the Bluetooth connectivity, which is actually really quick, like the way it pairs with the Switch, right? And the motion controller aspect of it works exceedingly well. No issues in the little time that I spent with it.
Yeah.
And the vibration feedback to me felt like the Taptic Engine on the iPhone 7. I was really impressed with it.
The hype is real about that feature. We played the, I think it's called Ball Guess.
Yeah.
Very blunt name, but you basically roll the Joy-Con around and there's these little balls inside and you have to guess how many. And thanks to the HD rumble inside the controllers, it really, really does feel like there are balls rolling around inside it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the Ball Run game is definitely my favorite in the small group of games that we managed to play. So it was astounding because it did feel like there were balls inside that controller rolling around. It's hard to describe.
Yeah.
Really, the feeling that you get until you actually pick it up and try it. So I'm not entirely sure how that thing works from a technical standpoint, but it's really impressive and it just adds to the immersiveness and the fun of it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll see plenty more of that.
Oh, I have no doubt. There are a lot of indie titles Nintendo announced a bunch of indie titles this week, and there was a small handful of them that will be shipping with HD Rumble support. So it's going to be exciting to see how people use it, and obviously it's going to be exciting to see how Nintendo uses it. Breath of the Wild doesn't completely support it, but they could always patch it in at right. some point.
Well, I mean, maybe it doesn't need it, right?
It might not. Mario, the upcoming Mario game, certainly will use it, I would bet.
Mm-hmm.
God, that game looks really good. It's actually, fun fact, I'm not sure if I've said this on the show before. This is the first time Nintendo will have launched a Mario game and a Zelda game in the same year since 1986 or 1987.
I do not think I've heard you say that before.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware.
And not only that, we are likely to get some big announcements at E3 as well. They are basically planning a continuous release cycle for content. So not only do you have the tentpole games, you've got Zelda now, you've got Mario in time for Christmas, and you've got Splatoon 2 for the summer. Then you have a ton of indie games and a ton of third-party titles. Plus, it's extremely likely they will announce a ton at E3. And games I would almost count on seeing would be a new Animal Crossing, because...
Well, it's a big cash cow, right?
This console is practically designed for Animal Crossing. Like, everyone's favorite version of Animal Crossing is probably the 3DS version at this point, because you can take it with you. So, cross that over to the Switch with the upgraded graphics, bigger towns, more items, etc., etc. And you have what could be the definitive Animal Crossing for Nintendo Switch.
Right.
And then it is heavily rumored that Nintendo will be announcing a new Metroid game at E3 over
Ooh.
Switch.
Now, when's the last time we had a Metroid game?
A proper Metroid game?
Like, no, I'm not talking
Quite
remakes. I'm not talking about...
So the last proper Metroid game was Metroid Prime 3 Corruption, which came out for Nintendo Wii towards the end of the Wii's launch cycle. I think it came out right before the Wii U shipped. So this would have been like 3 or 4 years ago now. Maybe 5. I don't know. But anyways, quite a while. And it actually seems to be the case that this game will be a new Metroid Prime game, which may or may not be called Metroid Prime 4 Rivals. That was the game that Retro Studios wanted to make at some point. They had ended Metroid Prime 3 with a rival bounty hunter following Samus, and they had intended the story to kind of be about them facing off against each other throughout the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that bounty hunter actually made an appearance in the more recent Metroid Prime Federation Force, which was kind of this side game that they released for the 3DS. At the end of that game, that very same bounty hunter appeared and stole a baby Metroid from the Federation. So, it's like, I don't know, things are kind of converging where it's like, okay, there could be a game here with all of this stuff. And amusingly, Retro Studios' Twitter account, I want to say a month to a month and a half ago, they tweeted a number of very interesting pictures. A prime rib, a series of prime numbers. You getting the hint here?
I think I know what they're getting at.
Yeah, it's pretty
I think it's a farming game.
Clearly. Metroid Farm Simulator. Mm-hmm. 2017. Yep.
You have a farm on the moon.
Yep. And Metroids can eat all of your carrots.
Yep.
Yep. Exactly. And then space pirates can attack.
So anyways, it's been a long time coming, and
yeah,
I mean, it's obvious. I mean, you can put two and two together.
Yeah.
The new release of a console that's much anticipated, that has the hardware capabilities that fans have wanted, that Nintendo themselves have wanted for a while. Sky's the limit with development now. Like, people are going to go crazy.
Yeah, easily. And we are getting a ton of amazing games, like Zelda, but also the Switch has shipped with the full release of Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
With its new expansion for Spectre Knight. It's a knight with a scythe.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that.
So yeah, you've got all of Shovel Knight collected together. First on Nintendo Switch. It'll be releasing on the other consoles in April. Then you've got this really charming puzzle game called Snipperclips, where you play these two sort of eraser people. Eraser shaped, but then they can cut each other into other shapes. And you have to work together to cut each other into shapes that allow you to solve puzzles.
Hmm.
It's really clever. It's really clever, and it makes good use of the local two-person multiplayer, because of course, one of the big things about the Switch is you can just take each half of the Joy-Con and give one to another person. So in this game, you basically take the two Joy-Con halves, you each get one half, and you, with just that, you control one of these eraser scissor people.
Sounds wacky, but it sounds fun.
Yeah, I watched a video of it being played. It looks extremely fun. That's available on the eShop today. You can download it for $26.
And last week, in addition to the Shovel Knight, I mean, they had a whole slew of trailers, right? Game trailers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the indie event that they had. So one of the more notable ones, they announced Yooka-Laylee, the spiritual sequel to Banjo-Kazooie, is coming to Nintendo Switch. Along with all of the other consoles it's being released for.
Now, spiritual sequel, that's a term used that it means what? It's not a complete, direct, and obvious sequel. It's
inspired.
Inspired by, or somewhat related maybe to, not even necessarily in the universe, just means it's kind of inspired by it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, just like BioShock was a spiritual sequel to System Shock. Because System Shock and BioShock are both action RPGs where there's moral choices and kind of weird biomod stuff going on. But one is set in the future on a space station and the villain is a murderous AI. And the other one is set in the 1950s underwater in a dystopian city, pitting you against a wealthy businessman. So, same theme, similar themes, similar gameplay, but they're completely different in terms of setting and plot. Where Yooka-Laylee is concerned, they're both about a two animal buddy duo, and it's a platforming adventure where you collect things and defeat enemies and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But whereas Banjo-Kazooie was about a bird and a bear, Yooka-Laylee is about a chameleon and a bat.
So one of the things that I'm interested in with the Switch, which we've kind of touched on, but now that we actually have it, I wanted to sort of ruminate on what it means for the average consumer, for future trends of where we're going with gaming. Like, you know, all the stuff that they advertised in the ads, which at first seemed kind of silly in this sort of idyllic view of how Nintendo sees people hanging out in rooftop parties and whatnot. But
god damn it, Karen, why'd you bring your Switch? We're trying to drink here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now that I've used it, I mean, obviously it's everything that they said it would be, and it is very, very fun. And I imagine in party scenarios and just being around other friends, it's fantastic that you can just give a controller and play two games together. But what does this really mean for everybody else, for Microsoft, for Sony? Do you think they're looking at this and going, crap, this is, you know, we missed the boat. We didn't anticipate. We didn't think this is where it was going to go. Maybe there needs to be a convergence. And I think that's where I'm going with this, is convergence in technologies between, now we're not going to have, there is going to be no dividing line between the home and the office and the commute, that you just have this one device that can do all those things really, really well, which is what I think Switch purports to be. The smartphone, you know, people could argue, the smartphone can do all those things even better. It's more powerful. It didn't quite get there because of the touch screen, and people missed the physical buttons, and it's just, you can't replicate that experience on a touch screen. You know, you can't just, for example, and there are plenty of examples of this where you have games that are ported to iOS that end up having a virtual touch pad on the screen because it was designed for a controller. That just doesn't work. And yes, I know you can buy third-party Bluetooth controllers that are, you know, MFI certified, that can attach to the iPhone and kind of give you that experience, but it's not quite the same as having the Switch. It's a purpose-built device for one thing and one thing only, that's playing games. It doesn't need a Netflix app. I know some people are arguing it does, but it doesn't need a Netflix app. You have a smartphone for that.
You got Netflix at home. Netflix is on everything.
You just don't need it. It's such an irrelevant argument. Nintendo has never been the product for people that want an entertainment box, okay? It just isn't that.
No.
And it doesn't need to be. So going back to this, that's where I'd like your take on this, is what are your thoughts on how Sony and Microsoft feel about this? Do you think we're going to see some kind of convergence eventually with all other companies? I mean, I can't imagine what Sony's even thinking of this with their failed with their failed Vita handheld console. I mean, do they even want to take another crack at it?
I think Sony's position is that they prefer to own the living room. So future PlayStations will be geared around that idea. And for anything else, they have remote play. So if you're away from your PS4 or PS5 or whatever, you can stream those games from any device in theory. And that's probably the avenue they'll go down. Whereas Microsoft, they are completely buying into this cross-buy, multi-platform idea where Windows 10 and Xbox are completely interchangeable, where you can buy a game for Xbox One and get it for free on Windows 10, and the save games are cloud synced. So you can play on Xbox One, and when you get home, you can pick up right where you left off on your gaming PC, or vice versa. So that's their vision, I think, where it's just kind of this seamless experience across their entire ecosystem, where in theory, any of their hardware can play games and they're all connected.
Right. And I guess if any company is poised to do this, at least make that transition more easily, it would be Microsoft, because if they suddenly decide to get rid of that big hulking box that needs to be in the living room, not that it is a big hulking box anymore, but you know what I mean? Like, if they decided to build a handheld device like the Switch and only have that one device that can be used as a mobile handheld device or docked in the home as a home gaming console, it seems to me that they would be able to do that more easily because, like you said, they have this right once, works everywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's only possible because the Xbox has now shifted to PC architecture.
Right.
So Xbox and Windows 10 shared the same universal kernel.
Yeah.
And deep down.
And Sony, I feel like they're kind of stuck because obviously the inventors of the Blu-ray format, and they've bought into this Blu-ray concept, and their consoles still come with Blu-ray drives, not because people want to play movies, but because their games are, you know, 100 plus gigabytes that can only fit on a dual layer Blu-ray disc. I mean, they have the ability to hold large capacities of data in an uncompressed format. So I don't know what there's... I mean, they would have to go back to the drawing board and do some major work to get it working.
Yeah, it's hard to say what they'll do. I mean, Microsoft, their roadmap seems to be very transparent. It's pretty obvious where they're going. Same for Nintendo. I mean, the Switch has just come out, but it's pretty clear that they're moving towards a space where there is no distinction between handheld and console. In
right.
fact, I would bet that the Switch 2, and there will be a Switch 2, or it'll just be a Switch with revised internal hardware, maybe a glass screen instead of a plastic screen, just some nice quality of life improvements throughout. And that device will have the kind of battery life where Nintendo can finally feel comfortable saying, this is our new handheld. And it happens to be able to connect to a TV. And moving forward, this is our only platform. 3DS is retired, Switch 2 all the way.
Well, we already know it's the 3DS's days are numbered.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make sense to develop anything for that.
I mean, developers are going to need lead time. There are studios that are used to building things for just the 3DS. So they're going to need time to ramp up and start thinking, okay, now we have all this horsepower. Now we can use actual 3D engines. What do we want to do with all this power? Because normally Nintendo handhelds are incredibly underpowered.
Right.
Like, just looking at the latest Pokemon game, it's amazing the 3DS can even run it. In fact,
well, they did do a GPU update on the new one.
But it's still like a very underpowered chip. Like, we're not talking anywhere near what the Switch is capable of, what an iPad is capable of, even like the iPod Touch that still has like an A7 chip in it.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't even as powerful as that. So
to me, I look at, and tell me maybe if this is an unfair comparison, but I look at the 3DS now as the iPod lineup that now suddenly they have this vastly superior product. It doesn't make sense to keep it around for very much longer.
Mm-hmm.
It'll still be around for maybe a year or two.
Yeah.
But I mean, no, you know, it's going to just quietly fizzle out.
So they'll still sell it and games will still continue to come out. But at some point, the games will basically dry up
as
people move on to the Switch. The only thing keeping the Switch from becoming the new handheld, like I said, is battery life. So, I mean, you can only play Zelda without external battery support for 2.5 hours to 3 hours, depending on screen brightness and if Wi-Fi is on, etc. So that's going to have to go up to at least 6 hours before Nintendo would likely feel comfortable saying, this is our handheld now.
Is the battery user replaceable? Can you get battery packs and just swap the battery?
No.
Or is it, okay, so
the battery is internal. Nintendo would have to replace it themselves.
Okay. Well, there's a big market for portable battery packs for smartphones. So I'm sure you could just use one of those, get a 6,000 milliamp or 10,000 milliamp portable battery pack and just charge it from that.
Yep. I've got a 10,000.
Because it's effectively a tablet. That's what it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So
get
one that can provide at least one full charge for a tablet, and anything that works for an iPad probably has enough power for that.
Yeah. So I've got a Anker 10,000 mAh power core. And apparently, according to Digital Foundry, that specific battery pack can power the Switch for an additional 4 hours on a full charge.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So just that bumps Zelda up to 6 hours, roughly.
Yeah.
Which should be more than enough.
On that note of battery power and charging, did you see that hilarious picture of the Switch connected to a current generation MacBook Pro?
Yes.
That somebody posted They said that the Switch ends up charging the MacBook Pro, not the other way around, which is hilarious and kind of sad.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, as an Apple fan, I'm really deeply saddened that the MacBook Pro ends up
eating the Switch.
Eating the Switch. I mean, or the other way around. I guess the Switch is eating the MacBook Pro for breakfast. But I mean, it shouldn't be. If anything, the MacBook Pro has a bigger battery. So doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's weird. It probably has something to do with the way the USB-C is being used. Maybe the Switch reports itself as something.
Yeah, who knows what's going on? Maybe
the
something
MacBook
else.
Goes, oh, okay, I'll take power from you then. It's not entirely clear.
Well, you know, it kind of reminds me of, and this very well could be a different scenario altogether, but several generations ago, I think it may have been the iPad 3, before this was when it was still an iPad that would run really, really hot and take a long time to charge. But I remember that if you tried to charge that thing, oh God, what was it? If you plugged it into if you plugged your iPad with the USB cable into your MacBook, that there's no way it would ever get any kind of charge just because it would constantly be draining.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, they fixed that now.
Yeah, it required a different power controller chip, but yeah, that's mostly corrected now. Mm-hmm. Of course, the iPad has become considerably more energy efficient since then.
So we talked about predictions for battery life, some of our own wishes for battery life for the Switch. I think we were saying, well, if you can get 5 hours out of it, it'll be okay. But you're saying playing Breath of the Wild, because I guess it is so intensive, you maybe get 3 hours. Is that kind of optimistic? Maybe more like
it's
2?
Not optimistic. I would say it's a solid 2 hours, maybe 2.5 if you've got the brightness turned up all the way.
Okay. So I'm just curious though, is Breath of the Wild the only game that you can get other than that, the 1-2 Switch games from Nintendo?
There are several other games that are out now. Yeah. There's the RPG I Am Setsuna. There's a new Super Bomberman. There's Shovel Knight. Mm-hmm. There's Snipper Clips.
Yeah, see, I'd like to try it with Shovel Knight and see what kind of battery life you can get out of that.
That's probably
I haven't actually looked on, to be fair, I haven't looked online, so I don't know if anyone has done comparison tests on battery life yet.
Yeah.
I'm sure if they're not out now, I'm sure in the coming week or so, those will start to appear. And I'm certainly looking forward to the iFixit teardown, because I'd like to know what's inside there
well,
as far as RAM
I saw that someone had done a teardown, and it looks like the chip is a revision of the Tegra X1, whatever that one is called.
Mm-hmm. The NVIDIA chip.
Yeah, the latest Tegra chip. So it's a revision that was developed in November of 2016.
So that's really recent.
Yes.
So that's good. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. So it's a fairly recent chip. It's not based on the 16 nanometer Kepler architecture. So it's not based on the GTX 1000 series. But the next hardware revision will undoubtedly be based on it, which is nothing but good news, because the Kepler series comes with a dramatic increase in power efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So the next Switch will almost certainly be able to run something like Breath of the Wild.
It wouldn't surprise me.
5 to 6 hours.
It wouldn't surprise me though in a year if they just kind of silently slip in that chip in there. and run it at the same clock speed just because of the power savings.
It's possible. You
know, it'll run cooler. It'll run longer.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I could see them doing that. It's possible, but they would probably want to save it for an actual revision.
Sure.
Because then they can
say,
well,
they want something to talk about, right?
Oh, well, we've put a big battery in. Exactly. We've got this more energy efficient chip. The graphics are better. Still the same awesome portability you know and love. We've updated the Joy-Con slightly, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So, I mean, I would expect something like that within 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else about the hardware that stands out to you? Something that surprised you when you actually got it and you were able to... there was only one observation that I had, and that was the speakers. And the sound quality.
Yes, the speakers are stereo and they are quite decent.
They're loud
quality.
And clear. Yeah. I mean, you don't expect much from built-in speakers. And, you know, considering the fact that, you know, the Switch has a stand and you can prop it up and play games with two people, you're not going to necessarily have headphones available. And that was a smart decision to make those speakers stereo and make them, you know, reasonably loud.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Alex Knight from Hologram Radio, here to tell you about a fun new podcast that we recently launched called Serial Sommelier. Each week, David Kahlo and a guest select a random episode of a much beloved 1970s and 1980s Saturday morning cartoon series, review the episode, have some laughs, and of course, pair the perfect sugar cereal with it. Subscribe to Serial Sommelier today in iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and of course, wherever you can find your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, definitely. I would also say I was surprised by the feel of the material that the device is made of. It's covered in some kind of coating. It's really smooth and pleasant to the touch.
It's like kind of a satin finish.
Yeah,
almost.
It's a little rubbery almost, but
it's not
in
it's
a good
certainly
way.
Not slippery.
Yeah.
And I like that it's not glossy and prone to looking really smudgy after a while.
Yeah, that's usually the kiss of death for most hardware.
Well, I mean, the last Wii was like that, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Wii was just shiny, shiny plastic, glossy plastic.
Yeah, the less said about the gamepad, the better. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it doesn't look good after a while.
It looks so bad. You have no idea.
No, I don't have an idea because I don't have one.
This is just so much better on so many levels. It's ridiculous. The screen is pleasantly sharp. The colors are good.
I agree with you there. The screen looks better than what I had anticipated.
Yeah, it's probably a fairly high quality LED IPS panel, probably sourced from LG or something.
Yeah. Well, I was reading the text on it and it seemed sharp enough. I mean, it's good enough.
Yeah.
At that price point, I mean, let's be, realistic here. I mean, we're not talking about an $800 device or a $500 device. We're talking about a, $400. Okay.
Well,
Canadian.
$400
dollars,
Canadian.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're not talking about iPhone or iPad level pricing here. So, set your expectations accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, it's still a very nice looking screen.
Yeah, and considering what ships in the box, it's incredible value. So not only do you get the console, you get the controllers, you get the grip that turns the Joy-Con into kind of a more traditional controller, you get the dock, you get an HDMI cable, and you get the AC adapter.
Now, we talked about the dock, a few months ago, and I'm still surprised that they included that thing in the box. I really am. I mean, they could have charged $30 for that easily.
Yeah.
$30, $40.
As it turns out, it's $100, but...
I don't know if it's worth $100, but...
Considering the HDMI and the USB-C and all of that stuff in it, maybe... I mean, it's probably pushing it.
No, that's more like a $50 accessory. I felt the plastic on that. It's not certainly the most solid feeling.
Yeah. They're definitely going for a profit margin on it.
The fact that it's included, that's really surprising.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess they kind of maybe wanted to sort of exceed people's expectations this time after the massive amount of complaints that they got from the last DS release without the USB charging cable on that. Like, really?
Yeah.
A $1 part you guys couldn't include in the box?
And it's especially infuriating because the 3DS has its own proprietary port. You can't just use a cable you have lying around. It's a special cable. So if you just bought it, you're not going to have that cable. So right. You have to go out and buy it. So, I mean, with this using USB-C, it's just like, oh my God, welcome to 2017.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a lot smaller than I was expecting. Like, I don't think the press photos really do it justice. Like, when you have it in your hands and you're holding it and you're playing it and interacting with it, it's so much smaller and thinner than you think it's going to be. Like, you think it's kind of going to be kind of on the chunky side, but without the Joy-Cons in, the tablet part isn't really that much bigger than an iPhone 7 Plus, which is crazy. Like, you put it side by side and it's like just a little different. Like, there's kind of a strip at the top and to the right where it's taller and wider.
Yeah, how big are the dimensions on that screen?
So the Switch is a 6.2-inch panel,
okay,
720p, so it's around 260-something PPI. Right.
So but it has a good few inches on the 6 or the 7 Plus, whatever the Plus model is, which is a 5.5, I think, inch. So it's got a noticeable amount of extra space on it. Which you need. I mean, I can't imagine the screen on the Switch being any smaller than it is. You wouldn't want a screen smaller than that.
You wouldn't, no.
It's not big already, and I think it's fine the way it is.
Yeah, it's a really good form factor. I'm happy with it. It's probably the most powerful portable game console ever created. I mean, I just played a few minutes of Zelda and was blown away. Like, walking around, looking at the draw distance, seeing things off in the distance, like on a handheld.
Yeah.
Just like, you absolutely have to pick it up and experience it.
Yeah.
Even if you're not going to buy it, even if you're skeptical, you just have to get out there and try one, because this is the best thing Nintendo's ever made. Period.
Yeah, and we should, and I understand these are just preliminary views, but you had some interesting things to say before we were recording about the new Zelda game, about the capabilities. I was a little surprised because, again, like, I'm not really a huge Nintendo person,
so
but you were saying things about the gameplay that kind of took me by surprise.
Yeah, so Breath of the Wild marks a absurd departure from the traditional Zelda series. Traditionally, Link can't jump. Link can just kind of barely climb things, and he automatically jumps if you go over a ledge. Just various constraints and conventions that have always been with us since Ocarina of Time. But with this game, I really need to play more because I have to get into it and kind of get a feel for it and experience it. But imagine that The Witcher 3 and Studio Ghibli had a love child, and then that's basically Breath of the Wild. And a physics engine.
Yeah, because I know I saw you picking up boxes and smashing objects around.
The Witcher 3, Studio Ghibli, and a physics engine in a three-way. Bam, Breath of the Wild. That's what it is, really. just a remarkable game. The reviews are already in, and essentially it's being considered the greatest game of all time, more or less. On Metacritic, it currently has 98 out of 100. Many reviews have basically called it one of the greatest games of all time. In fact, one review from Edge Magazine said, Ocarina of Time may have to settle for second place.
I imagine that's high praise.
Yeah. Especially considering Ocarina of Time was widely considered the greatest game of all time by a lot of critics. And I mean, that you could say was one of the first open world games. Like, I don't know if you ever played Ocarina of Time.
No, I didn't.
There's a moment where you step out onto Hyrule Field and run around, and that was a truly unique moment in gaming because no one had ever done something like that before. No one had ever created a map that was that big. I mean, nowadays,
of course, we're used
tiny,
to that now.
But at the time,
what year would that have been?
I want to say 1997.
Okay, so that does that even predate Grand Theft Auto Vice City? Because that had a big open world experience. That was pretty groundbreaking too for the time, which I think, GTA Vice City, that would have been a PS2 game, I think.
Yeah, I think Vice City might have been 98.
They probably weren't too far apart. Michael will have to fact check that. We'll take a commercial break.
Okay, so Ocarina of Time came out November 1998. And Grand Theft Auto Vice City came out in 2002. So, yeah.
So even more impressive, they obviously paved the way for the open world.
Yeah. I mean, Ocarina of Time and Super Mario 64, obviously. But yeah, those two games really just, it was something that had never been done before and people were blown away. And I feel like this game takes that to a whole new level all over again, because not only do you have a massive, utterly massive map, you see mountains off in the distance. You know how game developers at E3 and so on will constantly try to claim, oh, you see those mountains off in the distance? You can go there. And then you can't really go there because there's an invisible wall.
Yeah, yeah.
You can actually go there in Breath of the Wild.
Well, it seems really appropriate as a callback to say, yeah, we kind of started this whole big open world thing. Let's revisit that and kind of go insane.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what this is. You have,
but not too insane. Not No Man's Sky is insane, where you can't find anyone.
Oh, that game. Let's not even talk about that game. That's really what this is, because the past few years we've had so many really good open world games, such as The Witcher 3, just this week, Horizon Zero Dawn. And so Breath of the Wild feels like Nintendo experiencing these open world games and playing with them and finding out what makes them tick, realizing the pitfalls, where it can go wrong, what people love about them. And they've just kind of ridden this lengthy, descriptive, detailed love letter to the entire genre. They have innovated and expanded on so many things. And people will be examining this game and talking about this game for a very long time. I mean, it's just so big and so random and beautiful. And
yeah. And I don't think it would be, you know, as far as predicting the longevity of how long people can talk about a game for, I mean, we're just speculating, but I think that that's probably a fair comment to make. And that wouldn't even be possible, I don't think, had the new game not coincided with a major new piece of hardware. Because you needed that. And if this console is the one thing that Nintendo needed to save them. I'm just, you know, painting a picture of a hypothetical future here. Mm. Then that's going to be a big deal to look back on. We'll look back at this as a really historical event for Nintendo.
I would say so.
That it was a turning point for them, that they were actually able to go back to the drawing board and make something interesting and creative and innovative. And all those words that we know Nintendo is associated with, but maybe we haven't seen all of those things being used together at the same time, especially the whole creativity and innovative aspect of their actual design. The design alone is creative and interesting and different, and a departure from the kind of boring and frankly ugly cheap plastic looking boxes that they've released lately.
Yeah, it really is night and day. Like, they have poured so much love into this product, and it really shows. Like, from the OS to the controllers to everything. Like, just so many little details.
Well, we haven't
so
even
many...
touched on the software, too, and we should probably talk about that for the rest of this episode here, is just the fit and finish. You know, we're not the only people to have complained about this. People have been complaining for years about the onboarding experience for Nintendo products. Years and years and years and years. And it feels like they've made a big step forward from all the videos that I saw, even before you even brought the Switch here so I could see it in person. But just things from like when you first turn it on to connecting to a wireless network, it just has a level of polish that I don't think we've ever seen in a Nintendo product.
No.
It's like they finally got out of the dark ages and they've acknowledged the way people are designing modern software, and they've just kind of woken up to that fact.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm curious what's happened internally. Have they hired new people? Do they have new managers? Did they, you know, what was the catalyst internally? There must have been a group of people fighting for this. I can only imagine.
I think primarily this was Satoru Iwata's vision. I think the Switch was what he wanted Nintendo to do. And I think they've been working on this for a long time. It's his legacy.
Yeah.
Essentially.
From, you know, probably came from a deep unsatisfaction with maybe the direction.
Mm.
I can only assume, but it must have been. I mean, if he, you know, I don't know if he knew how much time he had left, but
he might have known.
We don't know. Yeah. We don't know. But it is kind of romantic to think that, you know, this idea that he knew he had a certain amount of time left. And maybe before he even was sick, though, I'm sure. I mean, he wasn't exactly, he was in his, what, 60s?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, plenty of people live into their 80s and 90s these days. But
particularly,
you know,
in Japan.
Right. But I'm sure, like, you know, you get to a certain age and you start recognizing or at least acknowledging your own mortality, too. And he probably realized, oh, I'm not going to be, you know, the guy to run this company forever. I should probably try to think, well, how do I want to go out?
Mm.
You know? So if I'm sure he probably thought of like, what's the one thing that we could do? What's the one thing that I can do to leave, like you said, a legacy behind? And this is what we have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, essentially when you're holding the Switch, when you're playing Zelda Breath of the Wild, you are connected to the last thing that Iwata wanted Nintendo to do.
Yeah.
And they executed on it flawlessly, I would say. I mean, that's not to say it's not without its hiccups. The online service is still up in the air. Virtual console has yet to be announced. Friend codes are back, although they've sworn that they're going to update it so that you can do Twitter search, Facebook search, etc., and not have to use friend codes. that update is probably going to come out with Mario Kart, which is the first game that'll need it. Up until then, I don't think there are any titles that have online multiplayer. It's all local. So once Mario Kart comes out, then it'll be like, okay, here's this big system update. Here's the beta of the online service. Here's all the stuff we've been working on. Here's the app that you install on your smartphone for video, for voice chat, etc. And they're going to have all of that put together in time for that launch. And I think Mario Kart comes out either at the end of this month or April something.
Well, I'm sure plenty of people will buy that.
Yeah. I mean, technically it's the Mario Kart that was on the Wii U, but they've added some things, including a mode that people were screaming for a long time. So it's, on the one hand, it's kind of a dick move from them to be like, oh, you want that mode and you want this other stuff that we said we'd do? You're going to have to buy a Switch. Sorry.
Right.
But on the other hand, I mean, this is the future now. The Wii U is dead. It's time to move on. Nintendo already has. So, I mean, they don't even make Wii U's anymore. It's done. They've stopped. There is only Switch now. So,
you know, I can't help but think about just the emotions that I'm feeling now, playing the Nintendo Switch and seeing how it works. Just really reminds me of the feeling that I sort of felt as a kid back when Nintendo was at its peak with the NES and the SNES. Obviously, this is a much more complex technically device, you know, but just the level of fun and the way the whole thing came together.
Yeah.
I'm feeling those emotions again with the Switch, and it just, I just feel like, I know obviously a lot of people still buy Nintendo products. They've continued to sell stuff.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But for me, like, nothing has really excited me. I know they've done lots of good games, but as far as the hardware, nothing has really excited me until now.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. I think that says something.
Yeah. I mean, fun is back at Nintendo. That's really the best way to put it.
And when they do their presentations, I really felt like the unveiling of the hardware event, the tone was different. Like, you could tell when they were presenting it, they seemed almost reinvigorated. They seemed so, it was so evident that they were so proud of what they did and what they accomplished. And they seemed, I don't know, it was like the fire was back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. The Wii U was like a death march. It was like, oh, and they were just rudderless for so long with that thing. From the very first moment they unveiled it, where it was like, oh, hey, it's the new controller. We're not going to mention it's a new console. It's all about the new controller. And people thought it was an add-on. Like,
yeah.
Just that entire thing, it must have been so demoralizing to create that, and then...
Well, that's a good word for it, that it definitely articulates what I've been thinking about. Just ruminating on how things are going internally in that company. I mean, I don't work there, but God, it must have been so frustrating for so many years for people working
and
in various departments, just seeing kind of the stagnation.
It's weird too, because they made some really good games for the Wii U at the same time.
Well, that's the thing, is maybe
Splatoon, like, they created a whole new IP that's just totally taken off, and those awesome HD re-releases of Zelda, Wind Waker and Twilight Princess. Like, they released some really good games for the Wii U, and yet, at the same time, it was an absurdly underperforming console that sold poorly, that very few people owned. And it was such a weird disconnect. And then to me, honestly, it makes sense if with the Switch, they basically re-release some of those games. Because...
with updated graphics.
And yeah, like, there are going to be a lot of people that never played those games. And... oh, man.
I think that makes absolute sense.
What could be cool? Something people have said might happen. They might do a Skyward Sword HD for Switch. And I think that would be really cool. Because it was a bit more linear than most Zelda games. But it was also really different. And the art style was beautiful. They just did a lot of different things with that game. And I felt it was really underrated. Of course, Wind Waker, the HD Wind Waker on Wii U is probably one of the best things I've ever played. Just seeing that art style in 1080p is incredible. Just stunning. And if they re-release that on Switch, portable, etc., like, I would have no problem buying it again.
What about backwards compatibility? Do we know anything about that? Can you play Wii U games on a Switch? Is that possible?
Wii U is disc, Switch is cartridge.
But they have the store.
That's not going to happen. But with the store, yes, it is possible that they may port things over.
Right.
The two systems
must have totally different architecture, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Was the Wii U even x86?
Not to my knowledge. I think it was PowerPC architecture. Okay. And obviously this is a switch over because the Switch is powered by the NVIDIA Tegra X1, which is an ARM chip. So it's a completely different instruction set from PowerPC. So just like with the older consoles to the newer consoles where those were PowerPC and they go to Intel or ATI or AMD. Actually, yeah, the Xbox One and the PS4 are both AMD, I believe, not Intel. But yeah, like, it's a completely different CPU architecture, so ports aren't going to be completely obvious. But at the very least, Nintendo's own games could probably be recompiled for ARM. I mean, they've clearly done that for Breath of the Wild. They had a Wii U build, and I think they were about to go gold in November or something. And at GDC, they literally showed an email that was like, oh, hey, guys, we need to release this for the Switch. Thanks, bye. Like, it kind of went like that. Like, oh, by the way, can Zelda be for Switch too? And so they ported that, and they're porting Mario Kart. So obviously it is possible.
Right.
But they have not made any announcements about that as of yet. So we'll have to wait and see. Obviously it's day one, literally. So over the next few weeks, I'm sure we'll hear more from them about what's coming up.
Indeed. So we have 3 minutes left. Any other closing thoughts? I thought I'd let you run with this on the Switch itself, where we are at right now with Nintendo and where you think we're going to be in the next year or so.
Well, I mean, the Switch is a runaway success. It's sold like hotcakes, completely sold out everywhere. Good luck finding one. Whether that's Nintendo doing their usual artificial drought or whether they're actually selling them as fast as they can make them is anyone's guess. But clearly they are selling and people are really excited about it. I think that momentum will continue because their release library and their release timetable has a really good cadence to it. Basically, every week there is going to be something new on Switch. Whether it's an indie title or a Nintendo first-party title or a third-party title, there will be something coming out practically every week. And obviously, they will continue to announce games throughout the year. And at E3, they will announce some big titles that will either join Mario in the holiday season or come out in early 2018 to continue that momentum. So I would say the next year or so is pretty bright for the Switch. There will be a ton of games, games that we know about, games that we don't know about, and it's going to be fun.
And reporters are going to have their work cut out for them because they're going to be, there's so much opportunity for stories here.
Yeah.
Over the next few months. So we'll see.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there is a lot we don't know. Online, virtual console, that stuff has yet to be unveiled. So we'll probably hear about it in the next month or so, I would guess. So that'll be interesting. But for now, it's pretty great.
You've been listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. We'd appreciate if you could show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here by becoming a regular sustaining donator. Donate a dollar every month via Patreon. You can do that today by going to patreon.com/hologramradio. It really does make a difference. Subscribe to the show in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week, or your favorite podcast player of choice. Wherever you can find podcasts, we should be there. We're on TuneIn and Stitcher and now Google Play as well. And we'd appreciate a review wherever you can leave it, because it makes us feel good and it also helps other people discover the podcast. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. You can find us on Facebook as well if you just search for Hologram Radio. And you can send us email the old-fashioned way if you'd like to send us some feedback. That email goes to the both of us. It is theimpromptu@hologramradio.org.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.